Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven. Hi, pod crew. Today, a bit of a mix-up, as in subjects-wise, but hopefully it will make sense. And I'm sure by now you're all used to me having some random kind of tangents and stuff that I go on. Before I carry on, though, I will apologise. I have not been on it enough to organise guests, and it keeps being on my list. And then each week rolls round, and I haven't done it. I did go Chirag Patel's cocktails and balls party at the weekend in London, which, for those of you who are not aware of this, this means that it is basically one big dog trainer get together, piss up in a club in London with unlimited cocktails and a ball pit for adults. I went and did it in 2021, and me and Lil went on Friday and bumped into a couple of people there that had already agreed to come on the pod. So I kind of went up, gave them a hug, asked how they were, and went, "This is a nag." And they went, yeah, we need to sort it, So I need to chase that up this week. Because obviously out of normal situation and not in offices and stuff to look at diaries. So yes, I am trying. I've just been failing up until now. But yeah, it was a good night. I had a nice trip down to London, and I went to, for those of you who don't know, I have a bit of a collector's thing for all things Moomin. So I went to the Moomin shop at Covent Garden and spent a little bit of money. So I was very happy. Anyway, on to the subject of today. Some of it is fitness, dog sports, physio, all of that kind of stuff. But also touching on, in the last few weeks, there's been a bit of controversy going around Facebook between various kind of big name trainers, and there seems to be two main standpoints. And one of them is the subject is playing ball with your dog or playing fetch. And the controversy around it is some of the well-known trainers are saying you should never play ball. And the reason behind that is not only, you know, at risk of injury, which I'll go into, but also the fact that you are training your dog to constantly chase something. And for certain breeds, this is their view, this can encourage them to have a higher prey drive. And because they never get the kind of satisfaction of completing what we call a predatory sequence. So if you think of it in terms of prey, there are many different stages of it, but it starts with kind of an eye stalk, chase, grab, bite, dissect and kill. And there's lots of bits between it. I won't bore you with the exact bits of it. But if you think about it in terms of playing ball, you get the chase, you get the eye stalk, you get the chase, you get to grab, but you don't tend to get the bite, dissect and consume parts, which you would if it was prey. So the argument was that dogs, some breeds, not all, but some breeds who are playing ball never get that end part of that sequence, so they are left very frustrated, and given the chance, they will put that energy elsewhere, essentially. That's the very short version of it. And then the other side of it was people saying, I play ball with my dog and it's not a problem, but you know, within reason. And I wanted to kind of put my standpoint on it. I have been on the side of never play with your dog. I've kind of gone through all phases over the years. So I used to play ball with Bella, my Rottie mix, and football was out, well, up until right at the end, which I know I've told you the story before. Usually I could just rely on her not going for people and dogs if I had a ball, or if a ball was involved, she was more involved, more interested in that, until that last time when she attacked the very old dog. So I was very ball obsessed, let's say, with her. And I did play ball with Merlin, which was my next big dog, but not loads of it. I kind of toned it down, but because he was a gun dog and I'd kind of got into doing more gun doggy games, I didn't, you know, like a lot of it was more kind of blind retrieves and more gun doggy, gun dog skills based stuff, rather than just chase it, bring it back, chase it, bring it back, chase it, bring it back. He could do that, and I probably did do that with him in his very young days, but obviously ended up with a bad back, and that wasn't going to happen long term anyway. I've always been one to have, if I have a dog that will swim and will play fetch, then yeah, we'll play in and out of the water. And I think that's slightly different water-wise, because there's less chance of injury. Obviously, it depends on how they're getting into the water. And getting out of the water, because I think that's probably the most damage that is going to be done, rather than the actual swimming, for a fit and healthy dog. I want to put that caveat in there. Rather than chasing and turning on grass or whatever surface it may be. And with Mika, my Springer, she was ball obsessed. Like, a ball could not be in the house or within sight, because she just wouldn't leave you alone. It'd be on your knee, then it'd be on the table, then it'd be on your knee again. You know, like, she'd just be constantly, totally obsessed. And I've worked with lots of Jack Russells or little terrier types, the Jack Russell types, that I've gone in to see for neurotic behaviours. They haven't been described to me as neurotic behaviours by the client, but essentially that's what it is. And they've got this totally wound up, high-end neurotic energy about them, and it's come from, essentially it's been fed by, I think the dog was always wired to be a kind of bit like that, but it's been then fed by constant ball play, because that's probably one of the only things the owner could do and the dog engage in the way that they wanted. And with those kind of clients, it's definitely been, we need to stop ball play because this is not helping. We also need to consider the adrenaline that's involved. And if you have, say, a reactive dog or a dog who is very stressy, or reactive in a barking and lunging and maybe biting, but that's more aggression, but a reactive dog, then increasing that adrenaline on the surface, I'm going to be very general here, on the surface, if you're increasing that adrenaline by lots of ball play, that's not going to help you reduce the reactivity, because they are high on that adrenaline and more likely to bark and lunge and snap and on all of that kind of stuff. So yes, I have been the fun police for many clients. And I think it comes now with, it depends on the dog, that, you know, the dog trainer's favorite saying, it depends. But it also depends on the breed, what they're bred for, and the owner. Now, I do not stand by ball throwers, you know, the big sticks that you put the ball in the end so you can absolutely launch them. I don't stand by those, because that's very long distance chasing, kind of sprinting. And usually if you've got to that point where you're using a ball launcher, the dog is very obsessed or very focused on playing fetch. So there will be, by the time they get to the ball, it's a good distance away from the owner. The dog knows that the next stage in this is to grab it, turn as quick as you can, leg it back. Which means that turn is probably where the injuries are most likely going to come, because dogs can be right pawed or left pawed, like we are right-handed, left-handed, and they will choose, if they can, depending on where that ball has landed or where they've caught up with that ball, if it's still on the move, to twist one way. So always to the left or always to the right. And over time, it becomes like a repetitive strain injury, because it's constantly doing it in that same way. It's only using certain muscles. It's not using the other side's muscles and things like that. So you're more, they are more, there's more potential for injury. So I do like to have, if you have a dog that likes a ball, you can use that as a distraction in, you know, distracting environments and things like that and get the dog's attention. I'm not against that at all. What I am against is the constant backwards and forwards. Now, one of the things that I will always put in with any dog, especially if they like playing ball, is that, can you wait while I throw it? As in, can you stay by my side while I throw it, it lands, and then wait for me to tell you to go and get it? That's usually the hard part, because otherwise you are practicing that chase drive, which a lot of dogs need that outlet. I'm not saying don't, you know, kill it, don't let it like kill that drive. But what I'm saying is put some control on it, because especially for, say, terriers, they are bred to chase something that moves. And when it stops moving, it's boring. They're bred to be ratters. So if it's moving, it's still alive, need to get it. So with a ball, I'd always build in that kind of impulse control of, even though it's moving, I need you to hang on. And then you build up to, even though you're mid-chase, can I stop you halfway? I've done courses on this, like provided courses on this, because it is such an important part of having a dog, if you want them to be off lead and enjoying life, in my view, that they need to you need to have that control that when needed, you can stop them. There will be exceptions to that, don't get me wrong, but you should always be aiming to improve things. But yeah, so my view on the ball thing is it depends, but I wouldn't say scrap it altogether. What I have done in the past is, you know, with the really obsessed dogs, you do either remove the ball, but replace it with something else. So it might be go and find it games, or it might be you just randomly placing the ball in the grass as you're walking along while the dog's not watching, and then sending them back to go and find it. That's more knackering brain-wise than it would be chasing after a ball backwards and forwards. Obviously, I have a Labrador now. She has a strong desire to share. That's a Labrador, to pick things up and share them. So, of course, she likes playing fetch. Now, yes, we do play fetch, and there aren't a lot of rules around it. I can ask her to wait if I want to. I don't do it every time. I think if you ask the dog to wait every time, then the dog's going to stop wanting to go for it because it's not fun anymore. You need to mix it up. Yes, I play with her probably on most walks with some kind of fetch game, partly because I'm still out. I'm taking the Daxies out, and they can't do as much as she can, and it helps kind of bridge that gap exercise wise if I'm just taking them all out together. But do I just like pull up at a park and start blasting her with, I use a Kong on a rope, or what I call the tampon. It's made by Kong. It's like tennis ball material, and it's like long and thin with a rope on the end, so it looks like a tampon, just big. Usually something on a rope, because I just have the girliest throw ever, or a Kong on a rope, and I throw that. But and it also gives me something to grab hold of when she brings it back. Sometimes we'll play tug, sometimes I'll just ask it to give, I release it, and we'll throw it again. But I'm not just parking up somewhere, getting her out of the boot and going, right, let's blast. Because you've also got to think, the dog's not warmed up. The dog should be an athlete. You've got to treat them like an athlete, as in those muscles need to warm up and cool down. Like, for example, the walk that I, like the most regular walk I do from home at the minute, it's probably a mile, a bit of, I don't know, 500 yards on pavement, and the rest of that mile is like through woodland. It's lovely. I like bumpy tracks and stuff like that before we get to like an open space. And then I might start with the Kong on rope, because by that point she's had a good sniff. She's done, you know, the toileting and all the things she needs to do. She's warmed herself up, coming backwards and forwards, checking in, making sure that the Dax is all right, going off and exploring. She is warmed up. And then I can play. And I might only play for a couple of minutes, and then I'll put it away. I'll get it out if I need to, if we're around other dogs, because I'll be like, okay, I might need a bit more attention here because she's a young Labrador and she'll want to go and run off to everything else. So I might just get it out and show it her and be like, oh, what have I got? So she's like, oh, yeah, mum's about to play. And yeah, sometimes we will just play tug, for example. That's a great thing to have when you have things on ropes and stuff. At least you've got that option. But then the rest of the walk will be through fields and then back through the golf course and then back up next to the road. So she's definitely cooled down by then. And because the last thing I want is her having any injuries. To put things into perspective, I think I've mentioned before that her sister ended up doing her cruciate. And she did her cruciate like a couple of days before she came into season. And this doesn't, I mean, she's recovered now. She's had the operation. She's doing great. She's about to go off to one of the assistance dog charities to qualify. But last summer, she did do her cruciate. And for a young dog that was under 12 months, you know, it's heartbreaking. So, and this is quite a common thing in Labradors, unfortunately. But I wasn't surprised. If it was going to happen, it's going to happen around, it's more likely to happen around a season. And this is one thing that I didn't touch on. I still came off that second hormones episode going, oh, I needed to say this. That all the tendons and, you know, everything is looser on a bitch around hormones. Everything loosens off. So they're more prone to injury during that time. So it's just something to be mindful of. I was like neurotic, obviously, with Ada in the run up to her season of, you know, she can't do anything strenuous. Yes, she can go and have a walk. Yes, she can go and have a run. Yes, she can chase a Kong and a rope, but it'll be very short distances and very controlled. And not many repetitions. So yeah, with Mizzle before, I used to have a physio come round every month last year. As part of the physio doing her final year at uni, so my guys were like part of her study. So she used to come every month, which was great because part of it was cheap, and I was getting all three Daxies done, and she was coming and doing Billy as well. But she did. One of the earlier sessions that she came and did, she says, you know, Mizzle's back legs are just quite loose, you know, around her patella and things like that. And I says, well, she is due in season. She says, okay, you know, that makes sense. And we kept an eye on it. And once she'd seen her again after her season, she's like, yeah, everything's fine now. It was literally just hormones. So keep that in mind, especially if you've got a bitch of exercise or strenuous exercise around the time of seasons. So yeah, I'm trying to think what else I need to say on that. So that brings me on to kind of dogs being or treating them as athletes, especially if you are competing with your dogs. I mean, people who do agility don't think this is new news to you guys, because those dogs really are athletes. You know, they're jumping, they're twisting, they're in and out the weaves. That's quite a strenuous thing. There's lots to consider. And I think most people in the agility world will have a physio person, or they'll take the dog to hydro to increase their fitness. You know, there's lots involved. But in other dog sports, it doesn't seem to be as commonplace. And I just wanted to highlight it. So, and I was just as naive when I first started out in dog sports. I think I started competing with Moss when he was about 18 months, roughly, in dogs rather than showing. When I talk about dog sports, although showing, breed showing is a dog sport, I don't kind of include that. You know, if you want to kill me, then kill me for that one. But it's not strenuous on the dog. But starting to do rally, you'd think, well, it's just a few signs and you're just going around a course doing signs and asking them to sit down, which, you know, that's a fair point. I'm not going to disagree. To complicate matters, I'm working a Daxi, and they're not, let's face it, they're not made to do this fancy heel work looking up, and they don't necessarily need to for rally. They don't need to do that obedience style heel work. They just need to be consistent in their position, and they don't need to constantly be looking up. However, because a Daxi is a hound, the closer, their nose is very close to the floor, and they will sniff because they're a hound. So if I can teach them to put their head up and look at me, they're less likely to sniff. And, you know, that's the way I have done it. I'm not saying that's the way everyone should do it with a Daxi, but that's the easiest way I found. And especially if you're working on like horse arena surfaces and stuff, it's very sniffy. Or like the next competition we're going to be doing in a couple of weeks, it's on a field with loads of rabbit shit, which for a mini Daxi is what they're bred to go after. So, well, not rabbit shit, but rabbits, as you know. So, of course, encouraging them to have their heads up is a good thing for the competition. However, for how they are made, not such a good thing. And I look at the old videos for Dactastic for the obedience team, and I think it's the second year we did it, but one of the years I look at it and I go, oh, I can see both of my dogs in that team weren't on their best form, let me put it that way. And I think that's because I wasn't really aware that I should have been taking more care of them. I should have been doing more exercises to help warm them up. I should have been taking them to, say, a massage person or physio more often than what I was. When now, if I saw any of my dogs move, I mean, I'm saying to like a layman, they wouldn't pick up on it, but I know my own dogs and I'm obviously a lot hotter on it now. I wouldn't work them now if they moved like that, but I didn't know any better at the time. So, and as time went on, my guys started seeing a chiropractor quite often, ironic for Daxis, but it has helped them have longer competing lives. And it's not just applicable to Daxis. It's applicable to all dogs, whether it's a physio, whether it's hydrotherapist, whether it's a chiropractor, or whether it's all of the above, or whether it's you learning more about how to assess your dog better and to look after them more, or all of that together, which is kind of what I've ended up doing. I do need to find a good physio for my guys again. But they, Mizzle was going to hydro last year to help strengthen her back end up. She just didn't move as straight as what I would have liked her to. And while she was still young and, you know, build her fitness a bit more, and because she's absolutely tiny, she's a lot smaller than the other two, I wanted to take her. Now, tonight I'm going to see my favourite vet, Heidi, and I'm taking all four dogs. And some of that is referral for Ada for hydro. Well, not that Ada needs it, but I'd like her to be a Labrador and actually swim, because she doesn't. For Ripple, now she needs it, I'll come on to that in a second, and get Moss signed off for it just in case, and a bit of an MOT for all four of them. So yeah, I mean, I doubt I'll end up taking Moss to hydro at his age, but you know, you never know. At least I've got the form signed and it's there if needs be. But at least Mizzle and Ripple will be going again on a very regular basis as we're starting in the competing season again. Keep up their fitness and make sure that everything is as it should be. Now, with Ripple, when she was 8 or 9 weeks old, I had, you know, everything that I bought for Ripple, I bought everything for her about times five. 2 years before she was born, I just was collecting pink things. Pink was her colour. Pink still is her colour, but, you know, different size collars, harnesses, coats, all of that for her to grow up with. You know, pink bedding. I don't even like pink, but I just chosen that as her colour. And I even managed to find a pink crate. So I was like, brilliant. And it was the same size as the little Dax crates, what I'd got, which are quite hard to get hold of. And it was a pink one and it was great. But she had her crate in her puppy pen, 8 or 9 weeks old. So I'd not, you know, not had a week or maybe. And the lip or the bottom bit where they jump into the crate at like the bottom of the door was higher than the other three crates I had. I'd not really noticed or not really paid any attention to it. And she managed to catch her foot, her back foot and her hock in it and like twisted and panicked. And I was there and I managed to get her out, but it had obviously done some damage. So went to see the chiropractor and sorted her out, you know, like, and that was it. You know, especially when their joints are not really formed at that age, I was very concerned. So she was seen at a young age, and then she used to be seen fairly regularly as she was growing up, as the others did, because they were competing. And Emma, the chiropractor, said to me at one point, I think she was probably about 18 months old at this point, she said, well, she's always going to have a weakness there in that hock, but, you know, she's as fit and as good as you're going to get her, and it's not causing any problems. But now Rip is 7 and a half, and it's now starting to cause problems. She's got a bit of arthritis in there, and it's starting to, I can see it now, if you don't properly, you know, like, if it's a colder day, she's been in a vehicle, then she comes out to work. Yes, I obviously warm her up, but sometimes she needs more of a warm-up routine to get that back end working properly. She's obviously feeling it a bit, so I've started her on a joint supplement to help her, and I think the hydro will help her too. If we need to look at more options, then we will. I've already said that this is her last year doing obedience as part of the team. I'd like to carry on doing a bit more rally with her, but it very much depends on her. If it's causing a problem, I'm not going to force her to do it. You know, I don't want to cause her pain. At the end of the day, it's me who wants to compete. She doesn't ask for it. So hopefully the hydro will help with that. But it's knowing these things. I know that with Moss, his neck, he's never had any, like, he's not had a disco or anything like that, but he's had a sore neck in the past, and that's lots of, you know, lovely heel work. Even now, if he manages to come and join me while I'm training the girls, he will just put himself straight into heel work position, head up, prancing like a pro. Even at 13 and a half, he loves it, but I can tell that I did too much with him when he was small. He's got a lot of what we call coat disturbance around his neck. It's like, it's quite curly and it's not the smooth coat that it should be. And that's usually, if you get this coat disturbance, it's a sign of trauma underneath. Part of it's genetics with him. You know, I'm not going to say it isn't. It is quite common within long-haired Daxies. However, it's more so with him because I know there was some form of trauma when he was younger, as in overworking him and having this high neck position. And I also will admit I am guilty of not working them equally on both sides, because in competition they need to be on the left, and it makes me feel good and it makes the dog feel good because they can do it, so we do it on the left. I have now with Ada started to make more of a conscious decision of trying to do her working with the heel work and the turns and stuff like that on the right as well, which makes me feel like so clumsy, like I don't know what I'm doing, and her feel like she's not, doesn't know what she's doing, because I'm so used to practicing on the other side, and so is she. But it definitely has a lot of value in practicing on both sides and just kind of giving yourself a kick up the arse sometimes and going, no, we need to do this on both sides, because it's only fair. But having, even if you go and like look for a course, like a 1 day course, or even some T-touch, things like that, there are courses out there where you, or even online, where you can learn how to help your dogs, whether it's a bit of dog massage, whether it's learning more about proper gait and like movement of dogs and how it should be. Part of it's knowing what's normal for your dog, but also knowing what is normal for the breed and how that dog should move and how to get that to its optimal position. I mean, I say all of this and I'm the one who, you know, will pay for the dogs to go and have all of these treatments and neglect myself. But we are just as important, as I was saying in last week's episode, getting ourselves straighter, whether it's chiropractor, osteopath. I did used to go to an osteopath regularly. Training Daxis does give you a bad back, and I need to go again. But it's just as important that we are as balanced as possible. And I think anyone who listens who is horsey will get this, or used to be horsey. The horse gets all the treatments, the rider does not. However, we know that as a rider, if we are more balanced, that helps the horse be more balanced. And it's very much the same when we're handling our dogs. I just wanted to kind of put it as a bit of food for thought, not only just with the ball play and warming up and cooling down, but also, you know, if you're training for competition, it's not just about rally. It can be for obedience. It can be for a lot of different things. I wouldn't say it really applies to, say, man trailing, but anything with any kind of strain on the dog where it's being asked to be put in a position which isn't particularly natural. So any kind of competitive heel work, that, you know, that would include a lot of the bite sports, protection sports as well. There's always kind of some kind of heel work section, heel work to music, things like that. The dog's head is not in a neutral position, which will change the rest of the movement. And it's how to look after the dog as a whole while we're asking them to do that, and not rushing them when they're puppies, which, you know, been there and done that, and it's not nice. So yeah, it's just as important to get, you know, like, we all want this lovely flashy heel work, but the dog's gonna fall to pieces if you haven't looked after it and ensured that everything else is in, like, optimum health and fitness. If you have a local dog physio, ask them, you know, get them to give you some exercises to do at home. There's a lot of platform exercises you can do that will help and build that fitness and build that core strength. For Daxies, that's key. For a lot of dogs, that's absolutely key. You know, it's as if I'm talking about people, really, isn't it? You know, you do sports, you need to keep yourself fit and active and have core strength. It's the same for the dogs. Yeah, just keep that in mind, really. Yeah. One of the things that we do on our turbo calls in the crew is quite a few of our members will be doing platform at work for 5 minutes of the 3 5-minute sessions. I'll quite often do it with my guys, or I'll have a warm-up routine where I'll spend the first minute or two of that 5 minutes asking the dog to do some, you know, weaves in and out of my legs, because that's starting to stretch out both sides, and then maybe some stand to downs. I think the exercise of stand to down to stand with no sit between is really undervalued. It takes a lot of core strength to get that. So doing a few of those to help them is really important and a neat skill to have, because usually dogs will kind of flop. Especially the down to stand involves all four legs pushing at the same time equally for the dog to come up and be straight without the sit between. And the same going down, it's like the plank position, isn't it? Or press ups, of everything is engaged to be able to do that. Obviously, I wouldn't say be doing this with an old dog, but with a young dog that you are looking to start in dog sports or already embarking in dog sports, hoopers, things like that, all of this will start to help. But there are plenty of resources out there to help you, or even asking your vet to put me in touch with the local physio, please. I want to chat with them. Go and see them. Even if you think there is nothing wrong with your dog, you can only ever improve things, and it will only help the performance when you're in the ring. But yeah, if you want to, on that note, if you want to join the crew, I am still offering a month's free, and I am opening it up again now for new members. Now I've settled into the new job. We would love to have you. You get the first month free. We do 2 turbo calls a week, and we have a monthly catch up where we'll just jump on Zoom and have a good natter and kind of go around the room, see what everyone's working on. Any questions for me? I update everyone on what's been going on if I haven't already in the group. We have ongoing chats in the group all the time. Crew members are getting tickets for Edition Dog Live as part of their membership, which is brilliant. That's on the 6th of July, and I'm really looking forward to that. Last year, quite a few of the members had never met each other, and it was like, not in person, and it was like them meeting old friends, even though they'd never met before, because they see each other all the time on the turbo calls. And yeah, it was just lovely. So I'm looking forward to that again. And hopefully, if you're interested in joining the crew, well, why not? You get a month's free. I'll put the link in the show notes. If you get lost, drop me a message, drop me an email. And yeah, I'll see you in there. Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog-owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.